We're here now with Bonnie Geisel, a John Muir scholar and author of Nature's Beloved Son, Rediscovering John Muir's Botanical Legacy. Welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, you know, you have a really interesting career with so many different facets that all relate to John Muir, Yosemite. How did you first get interested in studying John Muir's life?
I completed a divinity degree at Harvard and then went on to Drew University to be in my PhD. And I was looking for someone that combined issues of culture and nature and religion, and someone whose ideas sort of matched my own, what you might call a kindred spirit.
And how did you stumble upon John Muir, and what role did that play then as you became a scholar about his life?
I found John Muir's 1,000-mile walk to the Gulf. This was a trip that he took on his way to California. And in that book, he talks about the relationship between nature and humanity. That is, nature is equal. There's no superior idea that humanity is somehow better or rises above nature. And a lot of those ideas resonated against my own sense of environmental ethics. And so once I found Muir's 1,000-mile walk, I began my own study of Muir and have spent about 22 years studying him.
And now you live full-time up in Yosemite National Park?
I live in Yosemite from April till October. I run LeCount Memorial Lodge for the Sierra Club. And during the winter months, I've been staying in Stockton, California, because the John Muir papers are located at the University of the Pacific.
And so what is the situation in Yosemite with the lodge? I know that you're the curator of this historic lodge, but when you live there, are you living in a building? Are you living in a tent? What's your experience there like?
For 8 years, I've been the curator. I live in a tent in a campsite with my volunteers. About 100 Sierra Club members come in, 5 to 6 a week. They help keep the building open for the public. We have about 10 to 12,000 visitors a season. And I live there in a tent, a canvas tent, with my little Scotty dog, Atwood, without electricity or running water.
Does that make you feel more connected in some ways to John Muir's vision and spirit?
It makes me feel more connected to the things that matter to me. The idea of giving things up for a period of the year, giving something back, stewarding nature, dealing with issues of sustainability, living off the grid. Of course, in my office, I have electricity, which is great, so that I can, you know, communicate with the world. But it's a real lesson in sustainability, and I appreciate the opportunity to do that.
Let's talk a little bit about your new book. You have a book called Nature's Beloved Son, Rediscovering John Muir's Botanical Legacy. And it's a beautiful hardcover book with photographs. How did you get the idea to do a book about John Muir's love of plants? And what did you discover while you were writing it?
I began writing about Muir and plants when I was in graduate school. Part of my dissertation was about the relationship between John Muir, his mentor Jean Carr, and their love affair with orchids. And so orchids became part of the symbolic underpinning of their friendship. And so this has been going on for a while. It was really no surprise that eventually I would write an entire book about Muir and plants. I wrote a book, edited and wrote a book called Kindred and Related Spirits, which was the letters of John Muir and Jean Carr, and in the back of that, I included a botanical glossary. So little by little, I was inching my way toward sort of uncovering the whole story of Muir's great journey, his saunter, in search of what he would call plant friends.
People, I think, when they think of him, think of huge, epic, big things, Yosemite Park, long voyages and journeys. They might not think of him as having knowledge about all the critters and plants and things that were in those large landscapes. So what was his knowledge of botanical life? I mean, did he study it deeply on his own? Did he just have an affinity for it? And how does that relate to what you write about?
Muir started studying botany when he was a student at the University of Wisconsin. Actually, Muir writes in his autobiography that when he was 3 years old, he remembered his father putting him out into the garden behind their home in Dunbar, Scotland, and he remembers seeing the plants there. When he was a little bit older, he planted seeds, and he would dig them up each day to see how much they'd grown. This is part of who Muir is. Part of his understanding, his delight with the world, is really embedded in the blossoming forward of his great love affair with plants. This continues on throughout his life, and it becomes the foundation of his relationship, his understanding of glaciers. Glaciers provide food and water for plants. They provide soil. And more than that, it continues on into his preservation work. I think you could look at Muir, and he loved forests so much that he saw a forest almost as a giant bouquet. It's in 1875 when Muir travels to the Sequoia, the Southern Sequoia Belt, that he really begins to turn his thinking around about the need to speak on behalf of wilderness, to speak on behalf of forests.
Was he an acclaimed writer in his own time, or did his words become more famous after his death?
His words were very popular. He wrote for the Atlantic Monthly, the Century Magazine, the Overland Monthly, which was extremely popular. He published his first book in 1894, The Mountains of California, and he was extremely widely read. It was a popular prose style that included sort of a romantic orientation, which expressed his great passion for nature and wilderness. And people delighted in that. They saw this as a vehicle, as an opportunity, a conduit for their own celebration and experience, sometimes spiritual as well as scientific. I've often said that Muir's ideas about nature were the visible proof of his invisible faith, the divine made manifest, right there in front of him wherever he went. And today he's just as popular. We have right now at least three versions in children's books of Stikeen, the great story of his trip in 1880 to the Taylor Glacier with the little black dog. We have within the next year, Houghton Mifflin is coming out with an anniversary edition of my studies in the Sierra, my first summer in the Sierra. And so it's just as popular today. Why? Because I think we realize the value, the significance of nature. As we're dealing with climate change issues of changes, we want to try to find a foundation, a root that will help us to appreciate and move forward in our own decision-making about issues of sustainability and stewardship.
People today have all kinds of gear when they visit Yosemite. John Muir just hopped over the fence with a loaf of bread in his pocket and a rucksack and went out into the wilderness, or at least that's what legend tells us. So I'm curious to hear, is that true? Did he really go out so unprepared into the wilderness? And do his writings show that he was afraid, or did he have just a sort of, did his love for nature overtake him to the point that he had no concern for that kind of safety and survival?
I think early on, he probably had less concern for safety. As he matured and married in 1880 and had two small daughters, his concern about himself and his taking care of himself to see to his family's needs became more acute, obviously.
What do you think the rest of us can learn from him and his legacy?
I think Muir provides a lens through which we can be introspective about our own lives, that we can look out there into the world and deal with issues of sustainability, deal with the issues that we're facing today in terms of a changing climate, try to reach beyond ourselves into our community. Muir felt very strongly about ideas of community, what creates a good community, and he included in that community all plants and animals. I think his legacy for us is to remember that message, for us to think about plants as friends, to understand that without them, life as we know it does not exist. And so we reach backwards to Muir and into the future and grab hold of something quite unique in his message to us about where we're going. Though, he doesn't provide any real theories on this highway to climate change, dealing with the struggles we face today economically and in terms of the environment. But he certainly helps us to embrace the very best that we can be in terms of understanding our relationship with the natural world.
As a John Muir scholar, what questions are you still addressing and searching to answer about his life?
Right now, I'm working on something that's a little interesting, a little different for me. I'm working on an issue relating to the glacial theory. I was at the Bancroft yesterday, trying to understand the personalities, because Muir is seen as an outsider within the life of the Academy, and he never really wanted to be there. He felt that it was sort of like being chained to a desk, and he didn't want to deal with what he called the ding-dong of civilization. And so he always wanted to remain on the outside, but that outside, while it gave him leverage to be able to explore and study in very special kinds of ways because he wasn't confined to the university structure. It also kept him as a somewhat of an outsider. So what I'm doing is trying to explore how Muir did science, this understanding of the integration of poetry as a vehicle to have a, help us appreciate science, but then science as a door through which we can look for change. And that's where I am right now. That's the kind of thing that I'm working on right now.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's really been great to have you on the show.
Oh, it's been delightful. Thanks so much for inviting me.
You have been listening to Bonnie Geisel, the author of Nature's Beloved Son, Rediscovering John Muir's Botanical Legacy. She's also a John Muir scholar and the curator of LeConte Memorial Lodge in Yosemite.
This has been Orly Kotel with Sierra Club Radio. To send us feedback about the show or to ask a question for Mr. Green, you can email us through our website at sierraclubradio.com.
You've been listening to Sierra Club Radio, a weekly program of green news you can use. For more information, visit sierraclubradio.com.